While our forces were concentrating at Brienne, the Duke de Treviso, who had returned to Troyes, was ordered to cover that city and to advance his forces on the road to Vandover. The Duke de Bassano, who set out from Paris some days after Napoleon, now arrived at the imperial headquarters. The emperor was lodged in the castle of Brienne. This beautiful edifice had been plundered by the Prussians, and the windows were all shattered by the firing. The caverns beneath the castle still afforded refuge to some of the principal inhabitants of the town who had concealed themselves on the approach of the enemy. Napoleon, who had been educated at Brienne, could not suppress the recollections which now crowded on his mind. He took a survey of the principal points in the scene of war and found that they were all a prey to disasters. He sought by liberal donations to relieve at least the misery which immediately surrounded him. The mutilation of the castle and the burning of the town distressed him beyond expression. In the evening, when he withdrew to his apartment, he formed the design of rebuilding the town and purchasing the castle for the purpose of converting it either into an imperial residence or a military school. Sleep at length surprised him amidst these elusive plans and calculations. On receiving intelligence of the Battle of Brienne, Prince Schwarzenberg had, with the whole of his forces, hastily marched upon Bar-sur-Aube. And the junction of the Grand Austrian Army with Marshal Blücher's corps had thus been effected. On the other hand, General York had promptly repaired to Saint-Dizier to establish communication with his general-in-chief. On the 31st of January, Prince Schwarzenberg and Marshal Blücher advanced with their combined forces and offered us battle on the plain between Bar-sur-Aube and Brienne. It was not in our power to decline the engagement. The bridge of Demont, which would have been our principal means of retreat, was broken. It had been cut to stop the advance of Blücher when he was advancing on Troyes. This obstacle now impeded us in our turn in the maneuvers, which we wished to make to recross the Aube. The repairs of the bridge could not be completed in less than 24 hours. Our sappers doubled their activity, but in the meanwhile, it was necessary to prepare to receive the enemy. Both parties spent the remainder of the day in making arrangements for the battle. We were now on the eve of a decisive event, but already how different had proven the commencement of the campaign from what we had expected it would be. At the moment when we thought we had surprised Blücher, who was cut off from his rear guard and reduced to half his force, he had escaped us, joined the Grand Austrian Army, and now challenged us to an engagement in which we had only 50,000 men to oppose. At least 100,000. The battle took place on the 1st of February. The Duke of Ragusa was on our left at Morvilliers. Before him were the Bavarian forces who had arrived from Joinville. Between the Duke of Ragusa and the center was the corps of the Duke of Belluno occupying Chaumoya and Gibery. It was opposed to the Württemberg troops and sacking corps. The young Imperial Guard was stationed in the center at La Rotière to oppose the picked troops of Blücher's corps and the Austrian army together with the Russian Guard. Finally, on our right, towards the river, General Girard defended the village of Giville against the attacks of the Austrian corps of Gueulay. Our army was composed chiefly of newly levied troops commanded by veterans, but throughout the whole of the battle, they manifested the utmost intrepidity. In the center, where the conflict was most furiously maintained, Napoleon commanded in person, and there the allied sovereigns were also present. The darkness of night put an end to the engagement, and our army retained nearly the same position which it had occupied in the morning, but we could not claim the victory. The enemy enjoyed a decided superiority. A little more confidence would have rendered him entirely master of the field. At 8 o'clock in the evening, Napoleon returned to the castle of Brienne, where he gave orders for the retreat upon Troyes by the bridge of Lemont, the repairs of which were scarcely finished. While the army effected this movement, favored by the darkness of night, Napoleon was not without fear that the enemy, availing himself of his advantages, might make an attack and embarrass our march. He every moment made the most anxious inquiries and stationed himself at a window whence he could command a view of the whole line of bivouacs on the field of battle. The firing of musketry had ceased. Our fires were burning just as we had left them at the close of the battle. The enemy made no movement. The hills, which formed a curtain round the valley of Aube behind Brienne, completely masked our retreat, and it was not until daybreak next morning that the enemy discovered we had abandoned our lines. Napoleon left the castle of Brienne at 4 in the morning. Chapter 3. Retreat of the French army. Conditions dictated by the Congress. Commencement of February, 1814. On the 2nd of February at 11 in the morning, the French army recrossed the Aube and the Bridge of Le Mans, which was now cut a second time, separated us from the enemy. But the Duke of Ragusa, who remained on the other bank of the river to cover our movement, was in a most critical situation. General Vreta, at the head of the Bavarians, was attempting to turn him and cut off his retreat. Here our troops had to encounter the same maneuvers and the same enemy as at Hanau. This recollection inspired them with fresh courage. They found the enemy intercepting the passage of the Loire at the village of Ronay. The Duke de Ragusa immediately drew his sword and gave the word of command. His brave corps darted forward to charge with the bayonet, and 25,000 Bavarians were put to the rout. If the muse of history should hereafter be induced to obliterate some pages of her book, let her at least, for the honor of the Duke de Ragusa, preserve that in which the Battle of Ronay is inscribed. That exploit amply justifies the confidence which Napoleon placed in the intrepidity of Marmont. While the Duke de Ragusa was gloriously effecting his retreat towards Arcy by the right bank of the Aube, the main body of the army was continuing to retire by the left bank on the great road to Troyes. We halted that night at the village of Pinay, and early on the morning of the 3rd, the army arrived at Troyes. The old guard, commanded by the Duke de Treviso, came out of the town to meet us. It took a position on the road, formed itself into our rear guard, and checked the enemy at the moment when he expected to enter Troyes behind us. Napoleon lodged in the center of town, in the house of a merchant named Duchatel Bertillon. There he devoted his few moments of repose to reading the dispatches of his couriers. Since the departure from Paris, no bulletins had been sent from the army. The hope of commencing with the victory had occasioned the dispatch of intelligence to be deferred until the issue of the march against Blücher should be ascertained. Longer delay was impossible, but fortune was now so far reversed that we were under the necessity of commencing the series of bulletins of this campaign with an account of the lost Battle of Brienne. The first couriers who departed from Troyes to Paris were the bearers of this unwelcome news. But in proportion as the military events proved unfavorable, the greater was the anxiety to obtain intelligence from the Duke of Vicenza. At length, the expected communications arrived. The Congress was to be held at Châtillon-sur-Seine and was to open on the 4th of February. Count Stadion was to represent Austria, Count Razumovsky, Russia, Baron Humboldt, Prussia, and Lord Castlereagh, England. How many delays might yet be expected to arise from this mode of negotiation? Napoleon wished, if possible, to shorten them. He learned that Desir de Bernardier, first clerk of the Office of Foreign Affairs, had arrived from Paris on his way to join the French minister at Châtillon, and he immediately availed himself of the opportunity of transmitting to the Duke de Vicenza some modifications of his instructions, which the unsuccessful opening of the campaign rendered inadvisable. Mr. Labinardier resumed his journey on the afternoon of the 3rd of February. On the 5th, new instructions were dispatched to Châtillon. This last courier was the bearer of a carte blanche to the Duke de Vicenza, to whom Napoleon gave full power to bring the negotiation to a satisfactory issue to save the capital of France and to avoid a battle in which the last hopes of the nation rested.